This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.
This is the World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris, joined by John Morrison. John Morrison is a podcast host and the host of Culture Cypher Radio on WXPN in Philadelphia, where we make World Cafe. And usually every month he joins me for the Culture Corner and he connects the dots for us across different genres of music. But this month he's here every week talking about dance music through the decades for Black History Month. Started with the 70s, then last week we did the 80s, and now we're into the 90s. John, how's it going?
I'm good, Raina. Very excited.
Me too. I am loving these. It puts me in the best mood ever. So we're in the 90s. What made the 90s such a significant decade for dance music? And why was it different from the 70s and the 80s?
Honestly, I think that if there was an overarching theme for dance music in the 90s, it would be variety, right? In the US and the UK in particular, electronic dance music was in this like constant state of mutation. There were new subgenres and micro genres popping off. Like if you think about it, just in that 10-year span, we saw the emergence of Baltimore Club. What's up? Drum and bass, UK garage. Tech house, trip hop, which isn't a real genre, but that's a whole other story. So many styles of music emerged in just that short 10-year window in the 90s. And, you know, of course, a global club culture and rave culture emerged alongside it.
Okay, well, let's talk about one of those kinds of music that you mentioned. Last week, you explained how the disco sound of the East Coast influenced Midwestern cities like Detroit and Chicago. In the 90s, a new form of music emerged back on the East Coast. So what can you tell us about Baltimore Club?
Baltimore Club is interesting. It's a form of dance music that was developed in the city in the early 90s. And it's different from Chicago house and techno in Detroit because Baltimore Club music is primarily sample-based, whereas most dance music up to that point in the 80s relied on, you know, programmed drum machine beats as its rhythmic foundation, you know, synthesizers, that whole thing. Baltimore's approach was more closely related to hip hop in the sense that pretty much all of their songs were based on samples from drum breaks taken from old records. So it was a different approach to the creation of club music.
And this is so interesting. The majority of Baltimore club songs are based on samples from just two records.
Yeah. Lynn Collins, Think About It. There's a drum break in the middle of that song that pretty much any Baltimore club record that you hear has a sample of Lynn Collins' Think About It in it. And there's a sample from a disco tune by a band called Gaz, their song Sing Sing. So producers in Baltimore took those two beats, sped them up, chopped them up, they layered them on top of one another, and they really created a new wholly sample-based approach to making dance music.
Brown, the brand new brother in town.
Yeah, boy!
brother that's so damn cool. Never get played for a fool. Now it's my turn to rule.
Doodle in a fag.
Don't sweat it. If your body wants to do it, just let it.
Here we go, let's take it to the bridge.
And once you think you've had enough,
yo, yo, doodle, hold up.
And that sound, you know, naturally reverberated outside of Baltimore, and it spread to Philadelphia, and Philadelphia created its own native club music style based on Baltimore club. It was a little faster, a little more distorted and like aggressive, and Jersey, you know, developed its own style, which is very popular now, like Jersey club.
This is the World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras, joined by World Cafe correspondent John Morrison for the Culture Corner. Week three of our journey through the decades of dance music for Black History Month. This week, we're in the 90s. A lot of the music we've talked about in this series have come out of underground scenes around the country, but the 90s also saw some dance records that became big hits. What can you tell us about the relationship between underground and mainstream dance music in the 90s?
Yeah, the dynamic between underground music and the mainstream in dance music and club culture has always kind of been interrelated and like mutually influential, right? I think that the 90s in a lot of ways embodied that. The decade started with Madonna releasing the song Vogue. Early 1990, it was a song that was a tribute to a dance style that was pioneered by Black queer artists in the ballroom scene in New York. So then by the end of the decade, you had these big electronica acts, you know, groups like the Chemical Brothers, folks like Moby, Fatboy Slim, making these massive dance albums that were charting, like Billboard pop hit, you know, electronic records. So while a lot of these genres were pioneered in the underground, their influence always seemed to like bubble up to the mainstream, and bigger artists always seem to be picking from the underground to influence what they were doing and making a lot of money off of.
The next song we've got on deck here is Robin S. Show Me Love. What do you want to say about this one?
Classic song. This Show Me Love might be the best song ever. Like, you play it at a party, you know, tomorrow, and people will go crazy just like they did back when it came out. You know, the vocal on this tune is spectacular. The arrangement has that classic Korg M1 organ sound that you hear on a lot of house records from the time that a lot of producers still use now to kind of reference 90s club music. And it's probably the best example of the sound of the underground bubbling up to the mainstream, because if it didn't blow up, it would be like a cult classic. You know, if Show Me Love wasn't a hit in its time, people would be asking, why wasn't this a hit in its time? So it sounds like an underground club record, but it's just, it was massive when it came out. It just happened to catch on, and it's still big and loved today.
So mainstream that even I remember this song living in a little suburb outside of Toronto. It is Robin S. Show Me Love on World Cafe. Robin S., Show Me Love. You are listening to The World Cafe. That song's from 1993. World Cafe correspondent John Morrison taking you out dancing in the 90s this week on Culture Corner. Every week, getting into different decades of dance music for Black History Month. I'm Raina Duras. During the 90s, there was a lot of innovative dance music being made outside of America. What can you tell us about the UK drum and bass scene?
Drum and bass, or some folks call it jungle, is a genre of music that in a lot of ways is a direct result of an ongoing multinational, multi-place cultural dialogue. You know, drum and bass is essentially what you get when you combine Jamaican reggae and sound system culture with American hip hop and British electronic music and rave culture. You know, much like with Baltimore Club, drum and bass is primarily sample based and is in its origins was really based on a handful of drum breaks from some 70s funk records. Like pretty much 99.999% of drum and bass records are based on a breakbeat like Apache by the incredible Bongo Band or the Winstons record Amen Brother. Drum breaks like that that hip-hop producers had used, British DJs, the British drum and bass DJs, played those records on 45 and sped them up and made this faster double time music is really one of the most radical breaks from dance music tradition that we've seen in the last, you know, 50, 60 years. But it's still rooted in all of this history that came before it.
So tell us about this Goldie track we're about to hear.
Goldie, Inner City Life, might be the greatest song to come out of the drum and bass movement in the 90s. Goldie's production is epic, has these big sweeping strings, it's orchestral. The late, great Diane Charlemagne, her vocal on this tune is beautiful. And it's such an uplifting song, and it really shows the emotional and spiritual power of dance music.
Let's check it out. Goldie with Inner City Life featuring Diane Charlemagne. It's the Culture Corner on World Cafe with John Morrison. I'm Raina Duras. So John, you've taken us through the dance music of the 70s, the 80s last week, and this week the 90s. Why was dance music in the 90s so important? How did that music influence what we're hearing today?
Yeah, I think that in a lot of ways, the 90s really brought dance music back to the forefront of mainstream popular culture. It ain't really stray that far away. But, you know, say what you will about mainstream pop culture or whatever, the record industry, visibility is important when it comes to the health and survival of any style of music. And I think that, you know, as we've talked about with all of these sounds coming out of these underground scenes, you know, eventually finding their way into the mainstream zeitgeist. So it helped to not only get a lot of really talented people paid, but it put this music in front of a lot of young people who may not have seen it, you know, maybe didn't grow up in big cities where they had clubs that they could go to or DJs that they could see. So this music penetrated. A lot of young people found it, and you know, a lot of people were influenced from it, and a lot of dope music that we hear today is based on this. You hear the music that, you know, Gen Z kids make. They pull influence from drum and bass, you know, UK garage, the big mainstream house records that were hitting in like the early 90s.
So honey, nice to meet you. My love's pouring like a waterfall. That's my I don't mind all your thoughts signs. You're keeping me up each and every night. And we never got quite like this. It's your light up. It's the way you kiss. That's my tell them how we met because you tell the past. You're the thing that connects my brain to my chest. It's cause
all of that stuff is relevant now, and it shapes a lot of what we hear now, and as we'll talk next week about dance music in like the post-millennial era, you'll see that a lot of the 90s is still influencing what we're hearing today.
Can't wait to hear where we go next week as we head into the new millennium. Thank you so much, John.
Yeah, thank you, Raina.
John Morrison is a podcast host and the host of Culture Cypher Radio on WXPN in Philadelphia, where we make World Cafe. He joins me every month for the Culture Corner, and this month he joins me each week to talk about the history of dance music for Black History Month. I'm Raina Duras, back in a moment with more World Cafe.
The Indicator from Planet Money is a daily podcast that helps you make sense of what's happening in the economy. And video games are a growing slice of that economy, with billions of people around the world identifying as gamers. That's why we're dedicating a week-long series to the growing business of video games. Listen to the Indicator for Planet Money podcast on NPR.
This message is brought to you by NPR sponsor Lisa in collaboration with West Elm. Discover the new natural hybrid mattress, expertly crafted from natural latex and certified safe foams, designed with your health and the planet in mind. Visit leesa.com to learn more. This message comes from NPR sponsor Oracle Cloud Infrastructure. OCI is the platform for database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive at oracle.com/NPR.